The views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
This is the Montana News Network's TalkBack. Join the conversation at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309 with producer Nick Christensen and your host, Peter Christian.
Hey, good morning, everyone. It is Monday, June the 15th. We're deep into summer now, and hopefully your summer's going well. Hey, Mr. Nick, good morning, sir. How are you?
Doing good. Good morning.
And, if you're listening to my voice right now saying, what's wrong with Peter? My sinuses are on vacation for some reason, so I'm sounding a little stuffy today. I apologize for that, but we will make it through. So how was your weekend?
Oh, my gosh. Good. Good weekend, good week. Obviously, we haven't been live since Tuesday.
Yeah.
You were supposed to be live Wednesday without me, but then obviously you weren't feeling well.
Right.
And then I know, obviously, then we took a couple days off Thursday, Friday, because you were supposed to go to your grandson's second birthday.
Yes, they wouldn't let me come. They wouldn't let me come because I was sick. So there you go.
Yeah, so that's a bummer. And so, and I had family visiting at the same time, so it actually kind of worked out perfect for us taking the time off. But we're back here now. But yeah, no, I spent the week at the lake with my two aunts that flew in and visited.
Wonderful. And, where are they from?
Well, they're from here, but they now live in, one's in North Carolina and one's in Pennsylvania.
Cool.
So, yeah, East Coasters came all the way down and they're leaving today at different times today. Actually, one's already, I think, she left around like 6 a.m. So the other will be leaving later this afternoon, but it was awesome having them here. And we spent some time at the lake. Weather was not very cooperative again during the week. It was a little mix of rain and things like that. And then they came back to Missoula Friday, and I stayed up there with my dad for the rest of the weekend and came back yesterday. So it was a kind of a long trip, and now trying to just get back into the swing of things.
Now, what was it? Was it kind of a working weekend to get the stuff?
No.
Or just it's time to enjoy, right?
It was a lot of playing, a lot of games. I have a kind of a scary story to tell, but we only have about 2 minutes, so maybe when we come back from the next break, because we got caught out on a storm with our boat, but I'll save that story for the next break because I don't want to have it get cut off. The weather was you know, not super sunny and nice and warm. So it was like the first day we got there on Tuesday, we drove up to Big Fork and it was a rainy day, and we did, you know, took them shopping and did some fun stuff. And then Wednesday, the same thing, it was kind of groggy and gross. And so we just kind of stayed in and played games and things like that. And it was just kind of a lot of hanging out together, playing games, laughing, and watching sports. We watched the USA World Cup game. And then, I watched the NBA Finals on Saturday, and then the NHL Finals wrap up yesterday. So, yeah, it was fun.
Lots to enjoy.
Yeah,
there you go.
Good.
Yeah. I was pretty much flat on my back the whole time, just kind of trying to avoid people because I didn't want them to get what I obviously still have. And hopefully I'm not contagious anymore. But, I don't know what it is about early summer. Is it something just jumps into my head and says, hey, I'm gonna take up residence for a while. So
it seems to be every time I go somewhere, do something where you're still here, something happens or, you know, you get sick. And I'm like, it seems like every time when we take time off together, it's usually not that bad. Yeah, but when there's a day where, you know, I felt really bad because I know you were really looking forward to that trip. So that's a bummer.
But. Well, your grandson only turns two, you know, once. So
you'll catch him on his third.
I'll catch him on the rebound on the third birthday. I hope because the one thing that my daughter and son-in-law and my son-in-law's parents don't want is somebody who's sick to come over. Anyway, we're going to come right back. 721-1290 is our number. It's open phones for the next few minutes. We'll be right back.
Thank you. You've just had an accident.
Dennis Bragg with your updated weather. Mostly sunny and warm for most of the week as we're under the influence of a big ridge of high pressure over the northern Rockies and the west. Highs into the mid-80s both today and tomorrow with overnight lows in the 40s right there, around 50 degrees. A weak disturbance could bring some clouds overnight into Tuesday morning, but generally we stay sunny and with a mix of cloud all week long. Highs back into the 70s on Wednesday and then back into the mid-80s on Thursday and Friday.
Hey, it's Monday, June 15th. Welcome back to Talk Back, everybody. Peter Christian here, Mr. Nick Christensen, taking your phone calls and producing Talk Back this morning. It's open phones for the next few minutes until 8:30, and then the KGVO Book Club rolling right along. I believe Nancy's on the line. Nancy, good morning and welcome, ma'am. How are you?
I'm really good. I'm so sorry to hear about your past week, and we were all kind of wondering what happened to the show, you know, because you're statewide now and you got everything going for you, and I thought, what the heck's going on? So I'm glad that you're getting better, and thank God Nick survived his near, you know, he's going to tell us about his storm out there. But I just want to talk a little bit about justice in our country, law and order. This Camilo Anthony murder trial has me somewhat upset. We've got a kid, this Camilo, that had so much rage that he stuck a knife in Brian Metcalf, a young student, high school student, and it went all the way into his sternum. And, of course, he was convicted of murder and only got 35 years. And there were actually witnesses to this happening. And now they're trying to make George Floyd out of him, and it's not going to happen a second time. But when you go back in time, you see this terrible co-ed murder of four college students in Idaho. It was just awful. This Brian Holberger. And he killed mercilessly four college students. And there were no witnesses, and he got four life sentences. As far as I'm concerned, he should have been executed for what he did. But there's just, I'm just stunned at what's going on in our country. I mean, wrong is wrong. You know, I don't care what anyone says. This Camilo murdered, you know, Austin Metcalf, and there was no reason for that. But he... I just don't understand it. And as far as 35 years, I think this kid should have been executed too, this Camilo.
Well, it isn't often that they will... how old is Carmelo? Let's put it that way.
I think he's, isn't he 18?
Yeah. So that's kind of, that's pretty young to impose the death penalty. I don't imagine that was a big surprise.
Well, I know I've been seeing, you know, on social media, once in a while you'll see where a kid has committed such terrible crimes. I know the one got like 452 years in prison and whatever, but I just don't think 35 years was a stiff enough penalty for what he did to this Austin Metcalf. And 35 years is nothing.
Yeah, I hear you. All right, well, Nancy, it's always a pleasure hearing your voice, ma'am. Thanks for the call. We appreciate it. All right, so here we go, ladies and gentlemen. Go ahead, Nick, please.
Yeah, I'll just tell that story really quick while we got time. So, yeah, we went out on the lake Friday afternoon because, like I said, the weather was kind of crappy the 2 days before that. And we did go on the boat for a little bit that Thursday. But anyway, so we got good weather on Friday. So it was me, my dad, my two aunts, and then our two friends that live up there as well. And we went down the river. For those of you that know Flathead, you go kind of under the bridge and down the river, and right. We're in East Bay, just kind of by Finley Point. So it's kind of a trek to go all the way down to the river, but they wanted to see it. And honestly, there was no real weather in the area. You could see there was maybe a little bit of storming kind of going on, Big Fork area, but nothing was supposed to kind of come our way. And then, all of a sudden, we were crossing a buddy that was leaving the river, and he was saying, hey, it looks like, you know, it's getting kind of hairy, you know, down by where we were. So right. They're like, we're heading back. And so, you know, we saw him and we turned around and started to head back. And boy, all of a sudden, and this happens on Flathead, so this is kind of a warning to people, it just stormed out of nowhere. Wow. I mean, we had huge white caps and crazy wind and A little bit of rain.
How big is your boat?
So we have a tritune. So we can handle usually that kind of, you know, that type of water, you know, fairly well because, you know, it's designed for that basically. So anyway, but even with what we had going on, so I mean, we're trying to get back and we got like kind of right around the Quituckneck area and we had one point where the bow of our boat, the front end, with two people on the corner of each side, dipped all the way under the water.
Oh, my goodness.
And they were basically, like, floating for a second. There was so much water. And the boat took in water. And we thought, oh, my God, the boat's, like, sinking. Like, we can't.
Yeah.
You know, and it luckily, because we were going forward, it popped back up. And then that water slammed all the way into the back. And that's where I was. And we were, you know, getting life jackets out. And I was getting everybody their stuff. And there's a boat rental place off to the right side. Where there's a bunch of open docks and stuff. And so we went in there thinking that, okay, maybe we can tie up. And they're actually doing construction in there.
Oh,
so
no.
All of the docks were just destroyed. And there were, you know, raw or rusty nails sticking up and everything. So we get in this area and there's nowhere to go. And it was a little tamer in there than outside on the lake, but it was still really bad. And so... And the waves were, it was a small area to maneuver. My dad's got this big tri-tune and, you know, he's having to accelerate, decelerate, turn and do circles. And we're doing this for like 35, 40 minutes, just not knowing what we were going to do. And then luckily someone saw us struggling out there and a gentleman came down probably in his mid-20s. And he works at the boat rental place, which is where we were.
Sure.
And he saw us and... you know, he ended up helping us and telling us to go outside of the docking area. And then on the side there, they had literally just put up that day before some blue like fender walls.
Wow.
And so we went out, we were able to get out, get our boat there, toss them some ropes, tie off, get off. Everybody was okay. We had to leave our boat there overnight because there was no coming back.
Right.
And then went back the next morning and got it. But it was definitely a scary event for everybody involved. So we got very lucky that nothing bad happened. But just a reminder, you got to check the weather when you're out there on that lake because it could come out of nowhere.
Amen to that. We're coming up against a hard break here. We have phone calls coming in. It's open phones for another 10 minutes or so. By the way, 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Then the KGVO Book Club. The book is called Feed the People. And Dr. Michael Mayer and Dr. Mirdad Keel will be joining us again at 8:30. So stay with us, everybody. Montana weather.
Tens of millions of tickets.
Tens of millions of tickets.
Tens of millions of tickets.
Thank you, VetTix. Thank you.
Thank you, FirstTix.
Thank you, VetTix and FirstTix.
Thanks to your support, the nonprofits VetTix and FirstTix have given away tens of millions of tickets and counting to vets currently serving military, the immediate family of troops killed in action, and our brave, current, and former first responders. These tickets are a meaningful way to say thank you to America's heroes and help them re-engage with American life by giving them free, fun experiences and new happy memories that'll last a lifetime. And now, we want you to be part of the mission. Got extra tickets to concerts, games, or special events, or want to see if you qualify? We want you to go to vettix.org and firsttix.org today. Give something to those who gave.
No matter who we call family, when we choose to get the flu shot, we're protecting them. That's especially true for those who are 65 and older and people with chronic conditions like heart disease, diabetes, or stroke. Getting a flu shot every year decreases your chances of getting the flu. If you do get the flu, the vaccine makes you less likely to be hospitalized or die from it. Protect yourself and the ones you love by getting your flu shot. Learn more at heart.org/flu.
AM radio provides always-on news, sports, talk, traffic, and weather reports. It also delivers vital emergency information when your community needs it most. A new bill in Congress would ensure AM radio stays in your car. Because when cell and internet services are down, this free emergency service is critical. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to support the AM radio for every vehicle act.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
Hey, welcome back to Talk Back, everybody, on this Monday, June the 15th. Peter Christian here, Nick Christensen, taking your phone calls and producing Talk Back. And Emmett has been waiting through the break. So, Emmett, it's open phones for the next few minutes, sir. What's up?
Oh, thanks for taking my call. Well, I didn't even not know you were sick. Yeah, I'm really sorry about that. That's awful, you know. But anyway, I'd like to talk about the situation in the Middle East. Apparently, we've reached a deal with Iran. But it hasn't even been signed. It's going to be signed on Friday. And we really don't know whether the Iranians are on board because they keep saying not really. And they still want, I just learned this morning, they still want to take tolls on ships entering the Strait of Hormuz. Can we even really trust them? I mean, I want a deal, yes. But don't they have to surrender in this war? I thought that was part of a deal for any vanquished side. They have to say, we give up. You're too powerful. They're not doing that. Can we even really trust the Iranians? I wish this was Global Hotspots, actually. But I'd like to talk about this on a Global Hotspot sometime.
Well, I will tell you, it is unusual that they'd be looking for a negotiated settlement here. But I guess they're just trying to keep the peace in the Strait of Hormuz.
Interesting. Well, there's a lot more going on behind the scenes, like I've said, than we're being told. I have a cynical idea, too. I wonder if it isn't part of an election year cycle, too. You know, I mean, the stock market was jittery, and Donald Trump realized his Wall Street friends were going to lose money, and he wants the Republicans to win in November. I hope this isn't a political stunt on his part.
I have no idea. The president has not called me to ask my advice in any of these things. So I think we're reasonably safe in assuming that hopefully he and his staff know what they're doing. So
yeah, I hope so. But I agree with Ronald Reagan. Trust yet verify. So this book sounds interesting. This Feed America. That's interesting.
It's called Feed the People.
Oh, Feed of the People.
Yeah,
wonder what it's about. I guess we'll find out, whatever it's about.
Yes, you will in about 5 minutes. Dr. Michael Mayer is already in the studio. Dr. Mirdad Kidi is going to be joining us on the phone. We're not going to give anything away, though. We're going to wait until the actual show starts before we start nibbling at the edges here.
All right, thanks. Pun intended, I guess. Well, wonderful. Well, we got to pray for this nation. Yeah, thanks for taking my call anyway.
It's always a pleasure to hear your voice, sir. Thanks for the call. All right. 721-1290 is our number, 1-800-568-5309. Now, we still have about 3 minutes of open phones. So if there's something on your mind, something happened over the weekend you'd like to talk about, maybe national news, maybe state news, hey, give us a call at 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. And we'd love to talk about it. So, again, we have that time here for about another 3 minutes or so. And so take advantage of it. But coming up here in just a few minutes, it's going to be the KGVO Book Club, and we're going to be having Dr. Michael Mayer is already here in the studio this morning. Dr. Mirdad Kia is on the phone waiting, and we do have a caller. We have Dave waiting on the line. Dave, good morning, sir. What's on your minds for open phones?
Yeah, good morning. First of all, I'm happy they have an agreement for the war, but it's just an agreement to get to a peace agreement.
Exactly.
As far as the Strait of Hormuz and that Iran is the big losers, I don't see it. They can close down the strait anytime they want to with a boat or a boat with some land, some mines to shut down the straits. So they have some power, and because of the, because of their location, it's going to be there forever. And there's nothing we can do about that except maybe work on a real peace agreement that maybe both sides can agree with. And that's about the situation we're in.
Do you see Iran wanting to negotiate a peace, or do you see them saying, "Hey, it's our way or the highway"?
Oh no, I think they will. They want some money, and I think they will. Yeah. They if they get their money, there's some advantages to keeping the straits open. It means oil for them, and it means money. So money talks. So they do want an agreement along in the future, but they're not losers. Sure, they lost some equipment and they lost some leaders and some damage done. But I wouldn't call it we won and they lost. I would say we've decided to try to make some sort of accommodation to both sides and maybe live together.
Sounds good.
Who knows?
All right. Well, thank you for the call, sir. We appreciate it. And with that, we're going to bring to a close our open phones segment. And we're going to be preparing for the KGVO Book Club. And let me remind you that the book is called Feed the People. And, of course, and the author is, thank you very much. Here we go. Jan Dudkiewicz and Gabriel Rosenberg. Thank you. And Dr. Michael Mayer actually has the hardcover book here in the studio. So there you go. All right, we're going to be going to that here in just a moment after this next commercial break. But we'd love to have you be a part of the conversation. Dr. Mayer Dadkia joining us on the phone. Dr. Michael Mayer here in the studio. And it's one of the more popular segments of these two gentlemen is the KGVO Book Club. And it's been going on for a long time now. So we're not running out of books anytime soon. So we're going to come right back after this this quick timeout, and we'll jump into the KGVO Book Club with the book called Feed the People. So stay with us.
Hey, if you're waking up.
Dennis Bragg with your updated weather. Mostly sunny and warm for most of the week as we're under the influence of a big ridge of high pressure over the northern Rockies in the west. Highs into the mid-80s both today and tomorrow with overnight lows in the 40s right there, around 50 degrees. A weak disturbance could bring some clouds overnight into Tuesday morning, but generally we stay sunny and with a mix of cloud all week long. Highs back into the 70s on Wednesday and then back into the mid-80s on Thursday and Friday.
If you served, we want you to get the health care and benefits you earned. We want you to come to VA.
There's never been a better time to apply. Under a new law called the PACT Act, we've expanded VA care and benefits to millions of people who served and their survivors.
No matter where you served or how long you served, check out va.gov/PACT to learn more about what VA can do for you and your family.
Come to VA.
Being a family caregiver can be rewarding, but it can also be expensive. Search caregiver compensation programs at the AARP Foundation Paid for Care Hub, developed with support from United Healthcare. Visit paidforcare.aarpfoundation.org.
Hey, we're back. This is Talk Back, and we are transitioning now to the KGVO Book Club. Joining us here in the studio this morning, Dr. Michael Mayer. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning.
And as always, we are always privileged to have with us Dr. Mayer Dadkia, for history professor at the University of Montana on the phone. Mayer Dad, good morning, sir.
Good morning. The privilege is all ours, and thank you very much, Peter and Nick, for having us once again, it's wonderful to speak and share some ideas with our wonderful listeners.
All right. So, glad to have you both. And Michael, you're here in the studio. You've got the book right in front of you. What is Feed the People?
Okay, Feed the People is, the subtitle is Why Industrial Food is Good and How to Make it Better. And it's actually a very interesting book by two professors. There's a phrase you don't usually hear, an interesting book by two professors. But Jan Dutkiewicz is an assistant professor at the Pratt Institute, who did his PhD in politics at the New School for Social Work in New York. And he describes himself as a political economist who specializes in production, circulation, and consumption of commodities. And Gabriel Rosenberg is an associate professor at Duke University, both in the history department and also in the Department of Gender, Sexuality, and Feminist Studies. He did his PhD at Brown. And the book, as it says, is a defense of industrial food, which has been attacked by all kinds of people from all kinds of different directions. And it's not an unqualified defense, as they say in the subtitle. They have suggestions about how to make it better. We'll get to those in a little bit. But they begin with the notion that the idea...
Well, if you wouldn't mind, just for those who just joined us, what is the definition of industrial food?
It's a very good question. As they point out, you can't define it.
Yeah, okay, all right,
but,
there you go.
For the most part, it's people criticizing the food system and saying that what they don't like is industrial. But there is an element of truth here. The question of refining and canning and sure. Freezing and packaging and shipping and so on. And even production, meat production is industrial. And they argue that the notion that our food system, and they define food system, I'll get to that in a second.
Sure.
But is the notion that the food system is broken, which it seems to be everywhere, is absolutely foolish. As they say,
shall we wander down to Winco and see how broken it is?
Right, yeah. Well, that's exactly their point. Claiming that the food system is broken, they write, is nonsensical. To address the benefits and harms of particular aspects of the food system, you need to be specific. And they say there's some things you can criticize, but overall, the food system has produced abundant and inexpensive food distributed widely across the society, as no other society that's ever existed has experienced.
It's one of the wonders of our society, actually.
It is, and Americans spend a much smaller percentage of their income on food than any other people in the world. And so to say that the food system is broken, as they say, is nonsensical. And also, people who say that go back to an idyllic age of sustainable farming and clean eating that never existed. From the earliest days of the Republic, even before it was a Republic when it was a colony, American farmers produced for the market. The farmers who lived just inland from Salem produced for Salem and Boston. By the 19th century, American farmers in the Midwest were producing for an international grain market. So the notion that this idea of, you know, of people just growing enough to feed themselves is never existed. And also, there was a problem with that because often that system resulted in famine. You know, there wasn't enough to get through the winter, or there wasn't enough to get through a year. They talk, the diet of 19th century American farmers was more limited, less healthful than the diet of Americans today. So they start with that, and let them again define what they mean by food systems. They say most food writers suggest that the modern food system needs to be discarded and replaced with one where consumers search for locally sourced, labor-intensive, cooked-from-scratch options, supporting the small alternative and artisanal purveyors who represent a pastoral idea of a sustainable food. And they point out that that would be really inconvenient and really expensive. And as they say, the modern food system presents a bewildering paradox. It's never been better at feeding humanity. It's never exacted a more catastrophic toll. For millennia, most people eked out a bare subsistence through grueling agricultural toil. Hunger, malnutrition, and famines were frequent.
Tell you what, we're up against a break. We're going to come right back. Stay with us, everybody. It's the KGVO Book Club. We'll return in just a moment.
Busy bees.
Blowing out your birthday candles should be easy. But if you have undiagnosed COPD, you may find yourself short of breath.
Early diagnosis and treatment can add years to your life. If you have symptoms like wheezing or chronic cough, talk to your doctor and visit copdfoundation.org today.
Hey, welcome back to Talk Back on this Monday, June 15th. It's the KGBO Book Club, and the book is called Feed the People. And, of course, joining us here in the studio this morning, Dr. Michael Mara on the phone, Dr. Mirdad Kia. And, gentlemen, we just, if you will, had just had an appetizer. So it's time to dive into the main course. Well, so go ahead.
I thought what we'd do first is just go back and discuss what they mean by a food system, and then I sort of kick it to Mirdad for his reaction. They write, the food system is first and foremost a system. It's a network of interconnected but disparate actors and institutions working in concert but without centralized coordination to achieve the aim of making food available to consumers. And they say that there are four subsystems to the food system. A biological one, you know, the soil, the weather, and so on that enables and the plants themselves and enable farmers to grow things. An economic system, the means by which the exchange gets food from farm eventually to consumers. The political system, which involves regulation and so on. And finally, a social system, which I think in many ways is the most interesting. As they write, there's little that's natural about any food system, especially not ours. A food system entails efforts to shape, redirect, contain, and sometimes destroy biological systems that human societies confront. As I said, nor is naturalness something that always makes for a better food system. Foodborne illnesses are perfectly natural, and efforts to limit them involve technology and human exchange. So that's where they basically start. They examine these, and then they go through and look at each of these, often using examples from local places, New York City, North Durham, North Carolina, and others.
Mirdad.
Yeah, so, I mean, my interest in the book was, you know, because the food industry, as Mike defined it, has been blamed for a lot of things, from climate change to pollution to obesity to the suffering of animals, you know, workplace issues, and so on and so forth. And my sense was to sort of look at this and see what these folks, these two authors, offer. Clearly, what they offer is not the alternative that some have done historically by saying, well, we have to reject the industrial food system and tell individuals to buy local, for example, or go to small farmers and so on and so forth. They think it's unrealistic. That's what I get from reading. And the other thing that they basically suggest is that modern technology has been very instrumental in making the food industry, the food itself, far more abundant and affordable and much more varied, much more diverse in terms of taste, in terms of availability, and so on and so forth. So the question is what we can do within the context of the present system to make the food policy, the food industry, adjust with smarter technology, common sense policies. What I also was very interested in is how much they want to involve the government and how much they want to leave it to the private industry.
Yeah, I think as Mirdad was saying, that what they say about, you know, the so-called locavore, you know, you should eat just local food that is immediately around you. Unless you live somewhere where all those items are grown and always in season, you access food pleasures the same way most other people do. Ingredients are brought to you from all around the country and around the world. You purchase them at a grocery store or restaurant. And when you or a restaurant combines these, nearly every dish is a mishmash of ingredients. Few of them are local, and many of them are packaged, canned, preserved, pressed, or pre-made.
All you have to do is read any modern cookbook. My wife is always experimenting with new recipes, and she's got her Betty Crocker, the old classic orange cookbook, and she said, oh, honey, I need you to go to the store and get me some basil or basil or whatever the heck you call it. Or I need you to go to the store and get me some more potatoes or whatever. And to know that we have the ability, yeah, I know exactly where those are. Let's just go get them. I mean, how incredibly spoiled we are.
Yeah. And the notion that by definition, you know, processing food makes it bad or less virtuous. All of these trendy cookbooks that advocate that sort of thing, use olive oil, use the best you can get. Well, the best you can get isn't grown in Missoula.
Right.
It's either Italy or California or Spain. And so, I mean, you've got that sort of thing. And again, if you take a lot of things that you begin to process, you know, are you going to make, pesto? Well, we don't have pine nuts locally here, and we don't have olive oil locally here. We do have garlic and we have, basil. So, some people can get it at the farmer's market. So you just got squished up basil and garlic. You don't have pesto. This is the sort of thing that they say, you know, it's both elitist and unrealistic. And it's elitist because eating exclusively or as much as you can locally, and from artisan or small units of production, it's very expensive. And one of the benefits of our system is how democratic it is, in the sense that food and a variety of food and variety of healthful food is widely available.
And mass production does make it less expensive and more affordable for the average consumer.
And so does processing.
Yeah.
Think about it. If all the food that's canned or frozen, if that went to waste, food would be a lot more expensive. And frozen food is less expensive. Frozen vegetables are less expensive than fresh. Canned, still less expensive. And they're frozen are marginally less nutritious, very marginally. Canned a little bit more so. But if you compare it to nothing, it's a lot.
We're going to take a quick break. Nancy is waiting on the line to talk with you gentlemen. And all of our other phone lines are open, by the way, at 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Coming right back with more of the KGVO Book Club right after this quick timeout on the Montana Talks Radio Network. Support for Talk.
Wounded Warrior Project helps post 9/11 veterans and their families realize what's possible. With support and resources that bring warriors together and empower them to become stronger, both inside and out.
It's possible to begin healing,
to get the help you need,
to find peace.
And as each warrior's needs evolve, so do we. Because these last 20 years are just the beginning. Learn more at woundedwarriorproject.org/possible.
75 years of research.
75 years of policy.
75 years of opportunity.
75 years of freedom.
This is 75 years of the Muscular Dystrophy Association.
Join us at mda75.org.
Boy, talk about a topic of universal interest. Everybody eats, right? So all of our phone lines, boom, just came to life when we began talking about this topic. So any comments before we start taking calls, gentlemen? Let's get right to it. Nancy has been waiting. Nancy, good morning. You're on Talkback. Go ahead.
Yeah, morning, Gloria. Good morning, Drs. Kia and Dr. Myers. Interesting subject, eat. We all love to eat food. I want to talk. I have a comment and then a quick question for you. I want to talk about the anatomy of the human body that has changed since prehistoric man evolved. and our bodies, you know, like our teeth, we have wisdom teeth that our prehistoric ancestors used. We no longer need them because our food habits have changed, our eating habits have changed. Same way with our appendix. We have an appendix that our prehistoric ancestors used in the help of food digestion, and we no longer use it today. So the human is our body has been evolving, making progress, you know, in its design. But, you know, I'm curious because now we're hearing there's no such thing as a climate change. The threat of climate change is over. And, of course, we know that the globalists are saying this because they're pushing these data centers that need an enormous amount of AI water and power to generate them. But getting back to food, I have a question here. I'm hearing that more and more slaughterhouses are being shut down. Two more I heard this morning. One is just outside of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and 1,700 people are going to lose their jobs. Do you think that this is kind of a sneaky approach of eliminating red meat in our diets so these globalists can push this manufactured lab-grown meat onto the public? And thank you so much. And listen, guys, you have a fantastic 4th of July celebration.
Thank you. Thank you, Nancy. Gentlemen, please go ahead. Interesting question.
Thanks very much for the call. I think it may be the opposite. I think it may be that patterns of eating influence the decisions about whether or not to keep a slaughterhouse open. The book is very, the authors, Dutkiewicz and Rosenberg, are very hostile to slaughterhouses. One is a vegan, the other is not, but they go into some detail about the, you know, sort of, it's not quite like Upton Sinclair's The Jungle back at the beginning of the 20th century that supposedly revolted Theodore Roosevelt so much that he pushed through the Food and Drug Act. But they point out the cruelty and the ecological sort of inefficiency of meat production and slaughterhouses. But they also point out that people aren't going to stop eating meat, at least not unless there's a good alternative. And they explore two alternatives, one of which Nancy mentioned, which is the meat grown from cells rather than from animals. And the other is or from full animals. And the other is plant-based substitutes.
Mirdad.
No, I agree. And with what Mike just said, I think in some ways I like the book in that sense that the authors come from different backgrounds. One is a vegan and the other one is not. But regardless of what their preference is in terms of eating, they do not take their personal preferences into their analysis in terms of denouncing or dismissing meat industry or whatever. I have always believed in a more libertarian. That is, every individual has the right to choose her or his, a sort of food orientation, and the availability of the food in its diverse variety is always the best thing to have.
Okay, let's get another call in. This is Helena. Helena, good morning. You're on TalkBack. We've got about a minute and a half.
Hi, this is Helena. Thank you for taking my call. My question is about distribution systems in other parts of the world. I remember hearing back when there was actually more famine across the globe that the problem was not food supply, it was distribution. I'm wondering if the book talks about distribution in places like Africa or South America that maybe don't have as built up a system. Thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. We got about a minute, and then we can flesh that out when we come back from the break.
It's a very, very good question. Yeah. They don't deal with distribution systems in Africa or in the third world, but they do deal with distribution systems in the United States. But to Helena's question, I mean, her point is well taken. During the Ethiopian famine in the 1980s, Ethiopia was exporting food. That's the question of distribution. There's also the question of a Marxist government trying to suppress a rebel province. But still, what distribution is a very important part of what they call the food system.
Yeah, if there is any major weakness in the book, is that it focuses exclusively on the United States, not globally.
We're going to come right back. 721-1290 is our number. Steve Emmett and Annie are still waiting to visit with you folks, and a couple of phone lines have come open at 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Again, this is Talk Back, the KGVO Book Club on the Montana Talks Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
This is the Montana News Network's TalkBack. Join the conversation at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309 with producer Nick Christensen and your host, Peter Christian.
Welcome back, everyone. We're right in the middle of a fascinating conversation on the KGVO Book Club. The book is called Feed the People by Gabriel Rosenberg and Jen Dutzkowitz. So that's an easy one, too. Yeah. Gentlemen, we are back and we have the phone lines totally full. So let's get right back to it and say good morning to Steve. Steve, thanks for holding through the break, sir. Go ahead.
Hey, Peter. Hey, first off, the real purpose of my call was to talk about you. I'm sorry to hear that you didn't get a chance to see your grandson this weekend. I could sense that you're bummed out about that, and it made me sad for you. So apologies that you didn't get that chance. You know, and this is nothing to do with your family, but just in general, you know, people are far too freaked out about illness these days thanks to the COVID creation, which is another virus that we need to contend with that our tax dollars created. But it scared a lot of people, and it made them think irrationally about a lot of things.
Well, Steve, thanks for that, but we're in the middle of the KGVO Book Club. Go ahead, please. Yeah. What's your comment?
Yeah, no worries, man. No worries. I just could sense in your tone of voice that it hurt you. So
thank
I just
you.
Wanted to let you know that we're pulling for you. I hope you get to go out there and see him again.
Thank you.
Regarding the food deal, which is sort of the secondary purpose of the call, is, I don't disagree with the book. There's a lot of good points there. However, you know, the obesity problem in this country is real. You just need to walk around Missoula even and just see how many people are morbidly obese. And that boils down to strain on our healthcare costs, our insurance costs. And while, you know, the food system that we have is definitely better than any other, there are, you know, with every pro, there are cons. And certainly in our case, there's a lot of cons. There's a lot of use of sugar, carbohydrates that are just absolutely killing people, whether it's giving them diabetes or making them hugely fat and then giving them diabetes or other diseases, or accelerating other diseases like cancer. It's a problem. And so while the book may be right, there are other things too that, you know, there's somewhere in the middle that the answer lies. And then the other quick comment I'd make about the slaughterhouses, for those of you who've never seen how cows are slaughtered in mass, cows in particular, it's horrific. I mean, it's absolutely horrific when they drive these cows into the slaughterhouse. They electrify the floor. They either bolt them through the head. You know, the cows get to see the one ahead of them or hear them. It's definitely terrifying. Now, I eat meat. I eat meat, you know, processed in that way. But I do think it's very important that people realize, frankly, they ought to have a license to eat meat, because I think it would help them realize that animals do suffer for our benefit. And I'm not saying we shouldn't cancel that, but it is a reality of our food system. Anyway, thank you guys. And Peter, good luck with your family.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate that. We've got about a minute before we have to take a break. So any comments, gentlemen?
Yeah, just briefly, Steve's certainly right about the processed foods containing sugar and salt, which he didn't mention, which is obviously leads to high blood pressure and so on. But again, nobody holds a gun to anybody's head and makes them eat this stuff. And even when you get down to it, people say, "Well, it costs." It's not quite that simple, because there are a lot of things that are very inexpensive that are good for you that you don't have to eat processed food with a lot of sugar and salt.
All right, we have a whole hour to discuss this. And again, the book is called Feed the People. Dr. Michael Mayer joining us here in the studio. Dr. Mir Dadkia joining us on the phone. And we still have Emmett, Annie, and Catherine waiting on the phone to visit with you gentlemen. And a couple phone lines have opened up. It's 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Thank you so much for joining us this morning on the Montana Talks Radio Network. Back after this.
What if your home?
Dennis Bragg with your updated weather. Mostly sunny and warm for most of the week as we're under the influence of a big ridge of high pressure over the northern Rockies and the west. Highs into the mid-80s both today and tomorrow with overnight lows in the 40s right there, around 50 degrees. A weak disturbance could bring some clouds overnight into Tuesday morning, but generally we stay sunny and with a mix of cloud all week long. Highs back into the 70s on Wednesday and then back into the mid-80s on Thursday and Friday.
Listen, retirement is the long game. We can't play about our future or our finances. Let's put ourselves in the right position.
Start building your retirement plan at thisisretirement.org. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Hey, we're back. This is Talk Back on this Monday, June the 15th. Glad to have you along, everybody. It's the KGVO Book Club. Dr. Michael Mayer here in the studio. Dr. Mir Dadkia on the phone. And folks have been waiting to weigh in on this issue. So, Emmett, good morning. You're at the table. Go ahead, please.
Thanks for taking my call. Well, this is a very interesting topic, and I didn't think anybody had any problem with the mass production of food the way we have it. You know, I've heard of, posters that say, think locally, grow, own locally, or think locally, do something, about locally grown food and eating, wild locally grown food and harvesting it locally and, patronized businesses and, farmers markets locally. But I did not think that anyone had any objection to having food on your table brought in by major industrial farms or industrial plants. You know, people are getting strange ideas. I don't know why, and I don't even think it's from the hippie movement. I think people have just changed. But I guess my question is there have been a lot of talk by nutritionists about the evils of processed food, that somehow it's bad for you. And even our Surgeon General said, you got to get away from processed foods and have unprocessed foods. For processed food, does that mean TV dinners? I'm a bachelor. I love TV dinners. Or just food that's like meat that's processed, like a hot dogs and hamburgers? Because, I think it's fine to eat those. And, by the way, you mentioned about the Betty Crocker cookbook, the orange one. I have had a copy since I was 15 or earlier, so I've used the Betty Crocker cookbook. I know what that old one is, yep. So if you could answer that question about processed foods and what do you think of people's strange ideas. I love processed food, and I mean I love the way we, like you said, bring food to our table. I think it's a lot more efficient and a lot more cost-effective.
All right.
I can't believe people have a... Thank you.
Emmett, thanks for the call. Gentlemen, your thoughts, especially from the book.
Well, if you want to see a litany of the critiques of processed food, look at the, I guess it's the second or third chapter of the book where they talk about all of the food writers, all of the cookbook authors, all of the restaurants nationally that and the people who go on television who criticize processed foods. And as Emmett said, also we have politicians. It's a hot topic. There are different degrees of processing, obviously. Meat is processed. Hot dogs are really, really processed. they're much more processed, divorced from that. And again, they make the point that that processing has advantages, and also it has disadvantages.
Mirdad.
Yeah, and I think that the food culture has changed in general, and the emphasis on helping farmers and especially local growers has become far more prominent. I personally like that, in fact. I think we should do everything in our power to help, you know, local farmers and growers, and especially, you know, help the local economy in that way. But also, it's actually fresh, and it's very good for you, so it's mutual in terms of beneficial transaction between the grower and the consumer. But I also think that relying exclusively on the locals is not realistic. I brought up, for example, I know Mike loves cooking, and there are things like spices. I think both Mike and I, we love our saffron.
Yeah.
You know, and saffron is not grown here, and, you know, it's usually imported from Spain and Middle East, basically. And it's a wonderful spice to add to rice, to all kinds of food, as well as ice cream, by the way. So, but these are grown not even mostly in the United States, some of them, but outside. So I think just in terms of practical reasoning, we will always remain dependent on markets beyond our local and regional districts.
Yeah, and it's an important point, because even if you grow a tomato in your backyard and you want to have a tomato with a little bit of salt and a little bit of olive oil, did you grow the olives? Did you press the olives?
No.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it comes from someplace else.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we have about, let's try to get one more call in before we take a break. Annie, good morning. You're on the KGVO Book Club. Go ahead.
Hey, I appreciate the guests and the call-ins and the host of the show. And I got a comment and then a question. It just seems like this book brings a much-needed balance and sanity to the issue of food systems. And I read a book when I was in high school. It's called Let's Eat Right to Keep Fit by Adele Davis. I read it in the 1970s, and it was written in the 1950s, and it was talking about, you know, the evils of processed foods. And I have taken that into consideration, you know, with I'm a medical doctor, with my recommendations to patients, with the way that I live my life. But, you know, that book and these other books, they talk about the financial incentives to mass produce and cut corners and that kind of thing. But they don't take into consideration these cookbook authors and podcasts that are against processed foods. They're making bank also. So, and the way that we do mass produce it, like you said, it makes it capable of feeding the masses. Food's more abundant, affordable, variable. So it just seems like what you're saying and what this book is about, it's based on reality, and we gotta practical common sense and gotta work to improve the system and increase the benefits and decrease the risks. So my question has to do with government. You said something about government, more government involvement, and at least one of you guests have a libertarian bent, and I do also. So my question has to do with, you know, the government's already involved in regulating the food industry, and I'm wondering what more government involvement are we looking at?
Okay, and we're going to answer that question when we come back. I was just looking at my clock here, and we're only 10 seconds away from a break. So let's come back to that and give a full answer when we return right after this on the Montana Talks Radio Network. Stay with us.
Montana.
State News Network.
You don't hear as much about Snapchat being used in crimes as you did a decade ago, but Nick Northern reports a Billings man was still caught using the app to solicit young girls.
A Billings man is facing multiple felony charges after investigators say he used Snapchat to communicate with underage girls during a months-long investigation. Court documents show that 20-year-old Braden James Quisenberry is charged with rape, child sexual abuse, obstruction, and endangering the welfare of children. The case began after a parent reported concerning messages involving a 14-year-old girl, which led investigators to what prosecutors say were additional allegations involving other teens. Quisenberry has pleaded not guilty. For the Montana State News Network, I'm Nick Northern.
We'll be watching to see if Montana voters start pressing our congressional candidates this year for more of their plans for fixing Social Security. There's been a little discussion about the looming problem so far in the 2026 campaigns, but as Tracy Taylor reports, it could rise to the top of the list after a new report which suggests the impending collapse of the system is much closer than we thought.
Montanans are closely watching the future of Social Security after a new trustees report found the program's retirement trust fund could run short of reserves by 2032, only 6 years from now. Without action from Congress, benefits could be reduced by about 22%. Many Montana seniors rely on Social Security to help pay for housing, utilities, groceries, and other necessities. Lawmakers continue debating possible fixes as retirees and future beneficiaries await answers. Tracy Taylor, Montana State News Network.
And the Great Falls Police Department stepping up patrols in the city's core with the launch of its 2026 Downtown Summer Safety Initiative. Police officials say the targeted effort designed to address disruptive crimes that typically spike during the summer months. To combat the influx, residents and business owners will see increased presence from the department's direct enforcement team, school resource officers, and dedicated downtown officers. This is the Montana State News Network.
All right, crew, let's get her dug.
Honey, you want to give me a hand? I'm planting that tree, remember?
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. You must call 811 at least 2 to 3 business days before any digging project so you can avoid hitting our essential buried utilities. This includes natural gas and petroleum pipelines, electric, communication cables, and water and sewer lines. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811. Brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
Thanks for joining us on this Monday edition of Talk Back, and glad to have you along this morning for the KGVO Book Club. The book is called Feed the People, and of course, joining us here in the studio this morning, Dr. Michael Mayer, Dr. Mirdad Kia on the phone, and Catherine has been waiting very patiently to visit with you, gentlemen.
Before we do that, we ought to get to Annie's question.
Thank you.
Because she made two good points. One was about government involvement, Dutkiewicz and Rosenberg advocate a far greater degree of government involvement, regulation, control than I think than I'm confident with. But I think also it's worth sorting out regulation. There are different kinds of regulations. There are safety regulations. I'm all for those. You know, these things need to meet certain safety regulations because otherwise we get sick. But there are other regulations that involve either the cost or the pricing that government can get involved with, and I'm not so happy to see it. And I guess Annie's pretty close to what the authors say, and what a former college friend of mine said who became a doctor. And I remember visiting him, and we went out and got some Mexican, and he said, "I always tell my patients that once a month, it's not going to hurt you." Yeah, anything in balance.
Everything in moderation, right?
Yeah. Mirdad?
Yeah, no, exactly. I think that we need the government to be involved in setting standards in issues of health and in issues of scientific research, in issue of approving or not approving certain food items based on how they are produced, what they contain, and so on and so forth. They have not only the money, but the expertise and the institutions which have worked very diligently on these issues. But I think, like everything else, there has to be limitations in terms of how much the government is involved as well. Unlimited involvement means control, and full control by any institution, including the government itself, turns out to be a very bad idea.
All right, let's get another call in. This is Catherine. Catherine, go ahead, please.
Hello?
Hi, Catherine. You're on, please. Go ahead.
Okay. Good morning. I've noticed a trend on YouTube and other social media of videos of anthropomorphizing farm animals, specifically cows, chickens, and pigs, and treating them like pets. And I think this might be a trend to try to stop people from seeing these animals as a food source. I've also noticed a lot of videos of wild animals treated as pets, which I think is a dangerous idea. And the other thing is also some local meat processors have opened up in Montana, and some meat producers, some ranchers, now process their own product and sell online. In addition, the coffee culture is huge, and we don't grow coffee locally, but people don't seem to have an opposition to importing processed coffee beans. And also the last thing is that initiative in Oregon that would outlaw the use of animals for anything is going up for a vote in November.
Catherine, when I first heard about that, I thought it was a Saturday Night Live skit. I really did. Come on now. Anyway, go ahead. I interrupted. Go ahead, please.
No, that's fine. And it's going on the ballot. And I'm just kind of curious what your guests think of that and how that would affect the rest of the country as far as animal use would go.
Gentlemen, please.
Well, I think Catherine's certainly right about taking things to an extreme. I mean, you're talking to two animal lovers here on the air, but you can like anything, even a good thing, you can take too far.
Mirdad, your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I mean, as Mike mentioned. 100% with, the animals and minimum amount of any form of cruelty or violence. But at the same time, the reality is there is a meat culture there and a subculture. In order to adopt a more balanced sort of approach, I think the availability should be there, but... at the same time, we have to be very cognizant of the process through which this food is produced and, adopt an attitude which is balanced and which is also responsive to the needs of the society in terms of what it requires to feed itself and to survive.
You know, Catherine made the point about coffee, which I think is a really telling one, because as the authors point out, that often the use of terms like industrial or processed are references to things we don't like or that we don't think other people should use. But when you think about coffee, it's dried, it's roasted, it's ground. I mean, all that is processing and it's shipped. It's very much part of the commercial or industrial food chain, food system.
And please don't try to take my bag of Lay's potato chips away from me.
So. Yeah, I mean, but also in terms of coffee, remember the environmental impact in terms of how much land is changed and destroyed in order to produce that coffee, and not much about the exploitation of the labor force on the coffee plantations, especially in South America. Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on where the folks come from when it comes to what they prefer to eat or drink.
We're going
to
come right back after this quick timeout, and Jeff will get your call on. All the other phone lines are open at 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Talk Back continues on the Montana Talks Radio Network.
Don't be fooled. No matter who we call family, when we choose to get the flu shot, we're protecting them. That's especially true for those who are 65 and older and people with chronic conditions like heart disease, diabetes, or stroke. Getting a flu shot every year decreases your chances of getting the flu. If you do get the flu, the vaccine makes you less likely to be hospitalized or die from it. Protect yourself and the ones you love by getting your flu shot. Learn more at heart.org/flu.
Children are the greatest joy and our best hope for a better future. Friends, they are the future. But did you know that millions of kids are facing hunger every day? Food is not just food. It's energy, health, confidence, hope, and even love. Yes, love.
Thank you!
Learn more about how No Kid Hungry is helping end child hunger in America at helpnokidhungry.org.
We are back on TalkBack. 721-1290 is our number, 1-800-568-5309. This is again, the KGVO Book Club. And joining us here in the studio, Dr. Michael Mayer, Dr. Mirdad Kia on the phone. And the book is called Feed the People. And Jeff has been waiting through the break. So, Jeff, good morning. You're on TalkBack. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, good morning, folks. Good morning, Montana. Two quick points. First of all, regarding food processing, it is processing food that has made humanity humanity. They say that, and by that I mean when you go all the way back to fire. Fire was the first food processor, that it unlocks nutrients in food that we can't get to any other way. So when we discovered fire, we discovered the first food processor, and we've been doing it ever since. So to say that processing itself damages things is wrong. You know, are some vitamins and minerals maybe lessened, possibly, but the overall benefit is such that if it wasn't a benefit to us, we wouldn't be doing it. So second of all, in terms of health, I think the worst cabinet pick that President Trump made was JFK or RFK Jr. And the whole trope of make America healthy again. I don't think in general terms we've ever been healthier, you know, in terms of the life expectancy. COVID brought that down a little bit, but we have higher life expectancies than ever before. And I don't know if you remember this, Peter, but years ago you had Scott Zillidou from Liquid Planet on, and he was hawking a book, and he was talking about the dangers of sugar and risk and look at cancer and processing foods and different things. And I went out to his website, and he serves, I don't know how many different kinds of creamers, all with a lot of sugars in them. And so here was a guy who was talking about the dangers of sugar who sells sugar. So, you know, it was just one of those things. And coffee, at the same time I looked up coffee, I found 9 studies, and 4 of them said coffee was bad. 4 of them said coffee was good, and 1 was right in the middle on the graph. So, and now coffee is considered as close to a Mediterranean diet in a cup as you can get. So, you know, I don't think America has ever been healthier. Do we have too much processed foods? We're eating too much sugar. You know, when you look at the natural, the cycle of life over a year of growing and reaping and everything, you find that the sweetest things come in the fall, all the fruit ripens, all of that sort of stuff. So we eat out of cycle now. So, yeah, we need to pay attention to that. But with our life expectancies and everything else going on, we're getting taller, stronger. World records are getting broken. I think it's not much ado about nothing, but much ado about very little.
All right. Thanks for the call. Gentlemen, your response. Mirdad or Michael?
Go ahead, Mirdad.
I agree in terms of the longer process of food preparation and all that. We have become much more regulated, much more dependent on food processing, and in terms of the whole system of actually having a breakfast, lunch, dinner, you know, what is good, you know, and what you eat, which is healthier and all that. We have a culture, basically, that has been created. But within the framework of that culture, there is a great deal of debate. And I think what I really liked about this book is that it basically, you know, jumps into this debate and tells us some of the, you know, misconceptions, but some of the benefits of the system we have. And, I think Jeff is actually hit it correctly in this sense that we have to understand it in a sort of a long-term process and see some of the major benefits of what we have. We are stronger. We are, in some ways, you know, more open to discussion of the benefits and the harms of what we consume and so on and so forth. But this is an ongoing debate. In the end, I think that it's the individual who needs to choose based on what she or he hears in these debates and in terms of what his or her choices might be in selecting the food the person consumes.
We're going to come right back. The phone lines are lighting up again for the second half hour. Harry, Rick, Elena, and Ed are all standing by to visit with you gentlemen on the KGVO Book Club. The book is called Feed the People, and we're going to come right back. 721-1290 is our number, 1-800-568-5309 on the Montana Talks Radio Network.
Les Schwab Tire.
The Library of Congress invites you to visit the revamped Veterans History Project website, where firsthand accounts shared by U.S. military veterans are accessible to the public. Performing a search of the collection is easy. First, go to loc.gov/vets. Click Explore the Collections. Scroll down to Search the VHP Collections and click. Make sure you're searching this collection, and with simple keywords, you can find what you're looking for. Visit loc.gov/vets today.
Hey, we are back on Talkback. 721-1290 is our number. Great bumper music, Nick. That's awesome. All right, let's continue on with the KGVO Book Club. And Harry is waiting. Harry, go ahead, please. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. You do have to. A person has to praise the industrialized, you know, food system because it has produced food for. I mean, we have accessibility for food is, you know, incredible. But then there's always. But we do have the rich country problem now that actually the poorer you are, the more likely you are to be obese, which has a lot to do with, I don't know, maybe, you know, the prices, accessibility of different food. But then, the idea of processing is saying, well, you know, you, cutting something down and freezing it or whatever, that's a little bit different, you know, as opposed to making, like, Cheetos or Oreo cookies, you know. Those are a little bit more, there's a bit more involved there, and there's a lot of other stuff involved. But the thing is that we also have to look at when you industrialize, farming, you can produce a lot, but then also you're depleting the soil a lot, which means you got to put in chemicals, which has a whole different set of problems to deal with. So, you know, it's a broader problem than just accessibility to food. I mean, you look at other nations, poor nations, you know, they just barely get by and people are starving, where we are abundantly excess of food. But again, there's a whole, when you start doing that, it adds a whole different level of problems.
Harry, thanks for the call. Gentlemen.
Harry's point about the consequences of industrial or processing food is obviously well taken. One, the authors go into the environmental consequences of processing food and so on. And it's true, but everything that human beings have done throughout history has environmental consequences. If you look at the patterns long before there was anything resembling industrial food, at least nationwide, people were exhausting soil and moving farther west because crops like cotton are hell on soil. Tobacco is hard on soil. And so people were exhausting soil and then moving west for another thing. So it's the environmental impact is not exclusively a product of our modern industrial food system.
Mirdad.
Yeah, well, just look at Soviet Union and the cotton industry, which, to the point that Harry raised, which is absolutely correct, which is the enormous amount of water used create a sort of salination, the buildup of salt and destruction of the soil. This is the thing, you know, the population goes up. You need to create jobs. The cotton industry in Soviet Union went to work, created vast cotton fields, and now the soil is not available for any use for several generations because of the immediate need of the population to have jobs. This is the story of human society.
Let's get another call in. This is Rick. Rick, thanks for holding. You're on Talk Back on the KGVO Book Club. Go ahead.
Yes. I'm assuming that your two authors for this book are of the academic profession. And so I have to take anything with people that are from an academic profession with a grain of salt. They live inside their own dome, and they'll say, like, we need to eat this certain kind of food, that certain kind of food, yet they live in a system where it affords them to be able to do that. For instance, I live in southwestern Montana. We have a farmer's market every Saturday down on off Main Street here. And there's an organic chicken farmer that comes and sells his chickens. $25 a chicken. That's pretty expensive for one chicken. Same as with when corn is in season, when all the other vegetables. If you go to the farmer's market and buy locally, you can depend on paying probably 25% more than what you would pay at Super One or Safeway. And I've noticed that since Western Montana has become the mecca of tourism and wealthy people moving in, we have little niche stores, grocery stores popping up all over. We have a little Italian food store here in town, and a bottle of olive oil is running like $40, $40 to $45, and that's for a small bottle. So when people write a book and say this is how we should be treating our locals, our local farmers, I agree. We need to give them our business. But if you're a family of four, family of five, $25 for a chicken, or 25% more on any of the vegetables you buy from locally grown people, It's just not feasible for a family.
All right, thanks for the call, gentlemen. Your thoughts. We got about 2 minutes. Go ahead.
Rick's comment is pretty close to the position that the authors take on most things, which is that there are costs to buying local, to small farms, family farms, or small family farms, and sort of independent producers of various sorts, and he's right. They, as they point out, it's more expensive and therefore exclusionary. They're not advocating that. About the only time they ever get very prescriptive is when it comes to meat, which they say, you know, that eventually meat's gonna they think it ought to go, but they're also recognizing that it's not going to happen real soon.
Mayor Deb, we got about a minute.
No, let's go to the next call. I'd rather get more calls rather than...
Okay, let's at least get the question in before we take a break. Elena, go ahead. You're on Talkback. Go ahead, please, ma'am.
Oh, thank you. Two things, two blasts from the local past came up in my mind. But Dr. Mirdad, I think, said it, and he hit something right on the head, created culture. And that brings me to my two local blast. Years ago, when Peter, there was another station on, and I think I appeared on your station, we brought in two veterinarians from another state who were pushing spay and neuter. And so they're on the air. We're all sitting around at the table.
Real quickly, and we're running out of time. Go ahead.
Okay. And I'm just saying, no calls came in except when these two people said what they're going to promote in their state is using cats and dogs as a food source. I mean, if you're going to do this, why not use them? Well, that's when all the calls started coming in.
I hear
and you figured they do use it, in the eastern parts of the world.
We're gonna come right back. Stay with us. Thanks for the call. We'll respond to that when we come back. 721-1290 is our number. Welcome back to Talk Back. TalkBack is brought to
you. You've been diagnosed with COPD, but breathing is getting harder. Everyday activities take more effort, and life feels smaller. Is this you? If your COPD is getting worse, there are options to help you breathe easier. Learn more at isthisyoucopd.org.
This is Talk Back for this Monday, June 15th. Coming up on our final segment now, I want to say thank you to Dr. Mirdad Kia, Dr. Michael Mayer, for volunteering their time and sharing about this great book called Feed the People. And let's try to get some more call. Oh, go ahead.
They might have a response to Nancy.
A response to what Nancy had to say, gentlemen.
Just that her point about created culture is a very important one. And again, I'll read quickly from what the authors say about the social system is quite simply the information, norms, and beliefs about food that are all around you and inform what you want to eat. The contingencies of cultural context and personal history play an enormous role in your preferences and what you like to eat.
Great. All right, let's get Ed on. Ed, good morning. Thanks for holding through the break, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, about the Oregon law that's coming up, I think they will exclude fishing, too. And crabbing off the coast of Dungeness crab. I've done a lot of crabbing in western Washington, and the way you cook them is you get the water boiling and you toss in this crab alive and you boil them up. And that's just the way it goes. One other thing, in Montana, certain fishermen are just lord over you. The fact that they are catch and release only. And I tell my buddies, now you're torture and release to torture again. You know, it's not so humane. So in any event, when they get rid of Dungeness crab from Oregon, from the Oregon coastline, and catching them, I think it won't happen. We don't have to worry about that.
Ed, thanks for the call. Gentlemen. We have another caller waiting on the line. Annie, yeah. Annie, go ahead. You're on TalkBack. Go ahead, please.
Marcus Roll in your preference.
Okay, Annie, quickly, what's your question?
Oh, okay. Well, it has to do with, you know, the limitation of government that you were talking about, limitation of government involvement, and important to set safety standards, of course. And, you know, besides being a medical doctor, I'm also a public service commissioner, and so I'm very aware that government involvement, it doesn't generally lead to efficiency nor improvement in cost to the people. So I was wondering if you could comment on price fixing in the food industry and what that could do if the government did that.
Interesting question.
Or government forcing, you know, these producers to put in certain, you know, soil restrictions or nutrients, that kind of thing.
Gotcha. Thanks for the call. We've got about 3 minutes, gentlemen.
Well, just briefly, and because we need to talk about the next book.
Exactly.
As we said, I think the line is safety regulations are one thing. Regulations about cost or preference and so on, I think are a lot less desirable.
Your dad.
Yeah, in terms of price fixing, I mean, this is the same discussion we have with, you know, medications and, you know, the whole issue of how the government can bring down the price of, prescription drugs and so on and so forth. This is the big discussion that the government now has. I think there has to be limitations to government power, but there are places where government is needed to be there to intervene and one of them are setting standards in terms of scientific standards, in terms of safety, and so on and so forth.
Beardad and Michael, again, thank you so much. Go, please, quickly.
Yeah. The next book...
You have 2 minutes.
So, oh, good. Yeah, thanks.
We've got plenty of time.
The next book is Elise Stefanik, S-T-E-F-A-N-I-K. She used to be in Congress, some of you may remember. And the book is titled Poisoned Ivies. It's about the crisis in Ivy League education that we've all seen and read about. It's Threshold. It's published by Threshold Editions, which is a subsidiary of Simon & Schuster. And it's an interesting topic and an interesting read. And there was just some stuff about incidents at Cornell this morning that will once again take us back to those issues. So it's Elise Stefanik, Poisoned Ivies, and it's available through Simon & Schuster. You can get it on Amazon or any other Barnes & Noble, any other books purveyor.
Beardad, quick goodbye from you, sir.
Yeah, the Stefanik, as you know, the member of Congress, controversial, so we chose this book in order to bring that controversy to our discussion and see where our listeners land.
We try to amuse and inform.
Yeah. You do a marvelous job at both. So, gentlemen, thank you so much for being with us today. It's always a pleasure for the KGVO Book Club. Mr. Nick, as we look forward to Tuesday's fabulous program, sir, what's coming up?
We will do, we'll get a quick update from Americans for Prosperity from 8:10 to 8:20. And then the rest of that hour will be open phones. And then from 9 to 10, it'll be State Auditor and Insurance Commissioner Jim Brown has a lot to talk about. Today is actually World Elder Abuse Awareness Day, so we'll talk about that and a whole bunch of other stuff his office is getting into.
You bet. And again, thank you for all your calls this morning. You guys made it a great show, as Michael and Beardad always do. We deeply appreciate every single one of you that call in on any of the topics that we have here on Talkback. So thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it. And we will see you tomorrow morning, bright and early at 8 o'clock, for another exciting edition of Talkback here on KGVO. Talkback, of course, on the Montana Talks Radio Network, and we look forward to talking with you tomorrow at 8 o'clock. So till then, have yourselves a great day. Enjoy this beautiful day outside.